But yeah, I don't remember that. That's that. Oh Jesus Christ, that's a big spider. Ugh, motherfucker was on my couch. I gotta kill this guy real quick. Hold on.
Yep.
What's up? Welcome to episode 354 of the PS4 Blackcast. I am JCM. With us this week is Isley.
Yo.
And Messiah is out, so she will not be here in this episode. But we really don't have a ton. I mean, we have a few bits of articles to go over, but as far as new releases, I know Neo 2 released this week to some good reviews. I've only seen a couple of them, but if you were looking forward to Neo 2, that is out. Did you pick it up? Are you going to pick it up?
I have not picked it up yet. I'm watching the reviews on Twitch this week, and I'll probably watch it today on Twitch just to decide if I want to get it. I was on the fence about it before to see like if they improved some of the systems I didn't like, what the curve, the difficulty curve was like, because I love tough games, but I don't like stupid hard. And a lot of what I've been hearing about Neo 2 is that it feels unfairly hard, not hard in a fun way. And that's the big thing that I want to figure out, if these people are just not used to like Souls-like games. So I'm waiting for one of the streamers, like a Souls-like streamer that I love, to play the game and give feedback on whether or not they're enjoying it. But
yeah,
basically, I've heard a lot of initial feedback that it is the bad type of hard. And I hope it's not like that. Like, it's not like Sekiro or Neo 1 or any of the Dark Souls games, that it's more like a really like highly tuned Ninja Gaiden. And that's kind of what I'm waiting on at this point. So it's on my radar. And if I pick it up, I'll probably pick it up in the next week or two. But I have not bought it yet.
Yeah, I never did play the first one. It didn't pull me in because I was, kind of hesitant to play a Souls-like from someone who wasn't from. And then, of course, Sekiro got announced after that game was either, I think it was after it was released already, because I didn't pick it up at launch. And I was like, oh, I played Sekiro, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't really need to play Neo. So then when Neo 2 got announced, I was like, I'm probably not going to play it. But, yeah. But aside from that, yeah, their only other release this week was the Warzone mode for Modern Warfare, which is their free-to-play Battle Royale mode. Actually, it has two modes, Warzone and Plunder. And they do some interesting things, and I haven't played it yet. I've watched a lot of it, streamers playing it and everything. And they do the Apex thing where it's squads of three. You can queue up by yourself, but then you're just one person against teams of three. So it's three squads. They don't have a Jumpmaster mechanic like Apex, which I feel like would be a good thing to have now, to at least keep everybody together. But they do have some nice minor quality of life things where, like, as you fly over the map, you can see the names of all the points of interest. So there's a dumb article saying, like, oh, you don't have to open the map when jumping in Modern Warfare's Warzone. And I'm like, no, you still do, because, like, they pop up the circle pretty quick in that game. So it's like you want to see where it's at before you jump, obviously. But yeah, it's a cool little thing, and the names disappear as you get closer to the ground. And then of course, because it's Call of Duty, and I think Blackout had it as well, I don't remember, but you can redeploy your parachute. So if you're up on top of a building sniping, you gotta get down or something, you can just jump off and redeploy your parachute. Granted, in games like Apex, there's no fall damage, so you don't need to worry about that. But they do have a interesting respawn system. So if you die, you get put into a gulag, and you start as a viewer, and inside is like this little bathroom. It kind of reminds me of like I was gonna say that The Rock, when Nicolas Cage, and they're underneath in the sewers, and all those soldiers get shot by the defective Marines, they defected, but and they're all down there in the bathroom area. Kind of reminds me of that. And you basically go into a 1v1, and whoever wins the match, it's just like that 2v2 mode they introduced for Modern Warfare that everybody loves, except it's 1v1, so everybody gets the same loadout. And if you win, you respawn. And then if you lose, your teammates can use cash that you find. So the cash mechanic, which basically was pulled from Radical Heights, the failed Cliffy B battle royale game, you can collect cash from chess, also from killing players, and you can use that cash to respawn your teammates at these cash out stations. But unlike Apex and followed by Fortnite, where you can only use a revive station once, you can use the same revive station as many times as you want. But I don't know, like, if I revive you and then you die again, I don't know if the cost to revive you increases because now you've died twice.
That makes sense.
I don't think it does.
Well, that's certainly in line with, like, other games, I guess, but...
Yeah, but it would be interesting if it did for just that cash-out station, and then it was cheaper for the other ones, because that would incentivize movement and not camping in a spot. But and of course they do shoot up a flare, something to indicate to other players that there's a revive going on, because in Apex it's the dropship that lets you hop in Fortnite the van like shoots up this beam of light and makes a car alarm go off so people are aware. Granted, the one thing that Warzone does do differently is that when you jump in, you get a Glock, like a pistol, at the beginning, so at least you do have a gun when you land, which is different from all the other ones. But yeah, I like some of the stuff that they're doing. Like I said, I like that 1v1 respawn mechanic. Seems kind of cool. And yeah, it looks pretty fun. I just haven't played. And it's free to play. So I'm curious what that means for how many people are still playing Blackout, because that was a paid game. What's going to happen next year if Warzone's free to play? Is next year just going to be... it's going to be an additional map? Like, are they going to use the same engine that Modern Warfare is? Like, what are they going to do? I'm curious how well also it'll do for Activision, as far as using the free-to-play model. But I also like that at the pay stations you can buy loadouts. So if you can't find the gun you like, you can buy it, which is pulled from your multiplayer loadouts. So what have you built, and you got your skins from multiplayer and all that kind of stuff. And I'm assuming if you don't have the base game, because this one's free, you can just create those loadouts within the main menu. But yeah, it seems... and you can also buy perks, which is pretty cool. So you can get, like, I think supply drops and UAVs, and you can do flyby gunships and stuff like that. It seems pretty cool. But, again, I haven't played it yet, just because I didn't want to play with a bunch of randos. Also got a ping system, just like Apex, because they have very basic markers in Modern Warfare. It's probably much easier to implement versus having, you know, 12 unique voice actors needing to record new lines for everything you add into the game. So it's probably, you know, easier for Modern Warfare because you're not doing a hero shooter, technically. So they have a little ping system in call-outs, which is good. It's good to see that that's moving on to other things as well. But, yeah, we'll see how it does for them. I'm curious how popular it'll be. Again, since it's free, I can't imagine it would be, you know, any less popular than Blackout. And a lot of people are saying it's better than Blackout just because it feels more like Call of Duty than Blackout did. And I think that's mainly driven by the perks and being able to buy loadouts and whatnot. But... plus, I don't think you can revive your teammates in Blackout. They didn't have that mechanic. But yeah, definitely give that a shot if you're looking forward to it. As far as deals, there's all the same deals we talked about last week. So the PS Plus double discount, that goes till the 18th. There's another flash sale, but that ends on the 15th, so probably before this podcast is posted. And then Red Dead's also still 50% off. A lot of games on discount. I think there's a WB discount going on, too, because I know Mortal Kombat 11 is $24. Battlegrounds is discounted to $10, probably to promote the cross-play between Xbox and PS4. Rocket League's discounted. A bunch of other stuff is discounted as well. So check those out if you're interested. But, yeah, moving on to news. We did hear that The Last of Us HBO series that's going to happen... composer Gustavo, I said his last name perfectly the other day, and then now I'm going to butcher it, but Santaolalla, He's going to be doing
Centelela. I don't know, because I know it's. I don't think it's the like soft L in Spanish.
It's not the. It's not the Y.
Yeah.
No, but Gustavo's coming back to compose for the show, which is great, because especially since, you know, he's someone who said he doesn't like doing sequels to things, but then he came and did Last of Us Part Two, and so I'm surprised he's going to do this TV show, but that could be like he'll probably do different.
I thought it was like he doesn't like sequels unless they have a purpose or something.
Maybe he said that. It was so long ago, the interview. I just all I took away from it was that he doesn't like doing music for sequels. Maybe it could be something like if they're not different enough, so they don't inspire different soundtracks, maybe. But it's cool to see that he's kind of sticking with this franchise, at least. So that's cool. And then there was an article this week, of course, about how even though Last of Us 2 got delayed, they were still having a lot of crunch on the game, which is like, duh, a delay. I mean, we talked about I forget what it was last time that got delayed, but I think it was Cyberpunk. And like, just because we delayed it doesn't mean that's going to necessarily stop any crunch, because you delay because you have a bunch of problems. And you still got to fix those problems. You don't want to go slow, because that's why you had a delay in the first place, technically, is because you had these issues you didn't see, or, you know, whatever. And go back again to the God of War documentary, where they talk about that great scene where they're like, this is where we should be at as far as bugs, and like, this is where we're at. And like, they needed to be at like sub 100 or something, or just over 100, but they had over 3,000 bugs.
Well, it's like the delay is not meant to eliminate crunch. The delay is to fix unforeseen problems. You're just shifting everything back.
Yeah, and
I mean, you could delay to like ignore crunch, but that's not what it usually is.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's not why. Like, you try to, sure, and it could also be related to the fact that maybe you're trying to encourage less mandatory crunch. But there are, they say it all the time. You know, there are people. Who, you know, I'm trying to see it's in here. It's like, I didn't see this thing here before. Oh, God.
Go
ahead. Oh, you go. I'm reading some, so you go ahead.
I was going to say, part of it is also like the, a lot of times in the creative field, everyone always tries to do the, like, just one last thing. Like, it's never 100% done. So, we have delays on our projects all the time, and it's not because the projects weren't managed well or something. It's just because as you get closer and closer to the end, you're like, well, it could go out now, or I could spend the next hour working on this, which I know isn't in great shape. And it's like you essentially start tackling the things that would be patched or that you just aren't, like, that you know are a little bit rough and need some work and some, like, TLC. So even when you push things back in a creative field, it's really hard to just eliminate delay entirely, because the very nature of creative people is that they want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, they want to keep creating. So it's hard.
And apparently there was some anonymous source that talked to Kotaku about why they left Naughty Dog because of a crunch. But there are a lot of people who say, like, you know, I like what I'm working on. I want it to, like you said, they want everything to be the best. They want it to be that, shoot for that perfection. So they voluntarily do this kind of stuff because they want to do it. Now, and I'm sure you have in a lot of cases, people that voluntarily, you know, do overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done that at my own job, and I don't even work in the game industry. It's like, I just want to get this stuff done. So, you know, I'm going to do the OT to do it, you know, because it helps out the team or what have you. It's like, it's something that I could put off until the next day. It's like, but it's relieves a lot of stuff if I do it today.
Part of it for me is like, I don't like some of that stuff hanging over my head. So I'll occasionally work overtime unpaid because I'm salaried, because I don't want like items hanging over my head, or like I'm on a roll and I know that stopping and picking it up again is going to be difficult. So there are a lot of like weird situations like that, that you kind of run into. They're not great, but they happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't think it's something that's ever going to kind of go away. But yeah, just that people need to get over that notion again, that just because games delayed means there's going to be no crunch. It's not the case. Anyways, moving on, the apparently the Doom Eternal standalone OST is not yet complete and won't be available at launch, according to this article in Twin Infinite, which is unfortunate. So this is a quote from Bethesda saying, "Collector's Edition owners will receive all other items in the edition, including the ultra-high-quality, lossless digital versions of the Doom 2016 game soundtrack on March 20th. We will provide a digital, ultra-high-quality, lossless version of the new standalone soundtrack to all fans who purchased the Collector's Edition, and we are working on plans to deliver the soundtrack as soon as possible after release date. We will notify all Collector's Edition owners who redeem their soundtrack code, and we will update our official channels as soon as the Doom Eternal soundtrack is available. If you wish to cancel your, you know, thing, blah, blah, go ahead and reach out to the support." So apparently it's not complete, which I could see happening, because there's a lot of times in, like, in certain soundtracks, especially in games, it's not the complete song that plays. It takes, like, the first, you know, bit of it, maybe, like, the first minute, and will typically loop it, because it's, like, especially if it's a BFG division from Doom 2016, like, that's a heavy song, but that basically just loops the same section over and over during the fight. But if you listen to that full song, like, that song goes on for, like, 8 minutes, I think, if you listen to the standalone version. So it makes sense that maybe they get that main battle theme or whatever they have, or that the stage theme, some maybe of someone's, you know, like Samuel Hayden's theme, stuff like that, where it's just like they get the bass there, but they don't have the completed version yet. Like, okay, well, how are we going to ramp this song down? What are we going to do to make it slightly different than the in-game version? Like, we need to make it like an actual complete soundtrack. I could see that maybe taking it a little bit longer. So, yeah. Sucks a little bit. It's always kind of annoying when, you know, a game comes out, it's got a great soundtrack. I mean, that happened with Death Stranding. Like, the soundtrack came out for it right away, but the album that was just the actual music from all the other artists, like Churches and whatnot, like, that didn't come out until way later. But I'm sure that was a licensing thing with the music studios. I mean, like, hey, you know, can we get this song, put it on our own game soundtrack, like standalone soundtrack? But that's probably what that is. But yeah, in this case, we'll just have to wait a little bit. I'll just have to replay certain sections. I mean, I'll get plenty of that music once I'm just, you know, rocking it. And people probably put it on, like, YouTube, so they'll try to cut it some way. I mean, obviously, you'll have the PC sound files, so they'll put those up, but they won't have the official, like, complete variants of them. Yeah, and then the last bit of news we have here is E3 being officially canceled. This was on the 11th, which might actually have been... Yeah.
I think it was after last cast, yeah. It was right after. Like, it was expected, and everyone kind of knew it was coming and thought it was coming since...
Yeah, because people were backing
everything
out.
Everything else is canceled.
Yeah. But yeah, they officially... I think they said in a statement released on March 11th, ESA broke the news the convention would be canceled indefinitely due to the rising concerns of COVID-19. Quote, "Following increase in overwhelming concerns that the COVID-19 virus, we felt it was the best way to proceed during such an unprecedented global situation. We are very disappointed that we are unable to hold this event for our fans and supporters, but we know it's the right decision based on the information that we have." So, it is canceled. And then also, unrelated games, like, all the sports seasons have been postponed. MLB, NBA stopped doing their stuff because, like, one player has coronavirus or something like that. I think NHL also stopped. I think in Europe, like, their soccer teams are still playing, but the stadiums are empty. Like, I think they're doing practice games, technically, right now. I don't know when that season... I don't follow fucking football. European football, rather. But, yeah, a lot of that stuff. Concerts being canceled, of course. A lot of events have been canceled. I was like ECC and the South by Southwest. A lot of that stuff. Everything's being canceled. It's like, yeah, makes sense. A lot of cruise ships are finally canceling their stuff.
They canceled pretty much every sports season, and some of them are just delayed. Yeah. And then, like, some of the seasons in Europe are delayed as well. But they've actually played the empty stadiums before. I can't remember where it was, but they've...
Probably...
They did this in the past, and I can't remember if it was because of, like, after 9/11 or terrorist stuff, or if it was... Yeah, I can't remember exactly what the instance was, but they have played to empty stadiums in the past. But I think this is one of the first times it's ever just been canceled. And it's kind of like, well, the damage is already mostly done. Like at this point, people are, it's out there enough that pretty much everyone's just going to get infected.
Read
the CDC website, folks.
Yeah, but Disneyland also closing their doors yesterday, both Disneyland and Disney World. But they're just doing a month. And it's like, I can understand, again, if going back to before the podcast started, like if we had a, you know, countrywide, like government-supported vacation to self-quarantine and everybody did it, it's like then these big companies who are closing for months or a month, it would make sense because by then the incubation period goes, passes, and then the infection period for those people who might have it, you know, goes, and you're good. But like if Disneyland closes for a month, but people are still out there doing stuff and coming in contact with anybody who's infected, it's like you're still going to have to stay closed again. You know what I mean? It's like it's so weird. But yeah, I'm curious how to go because we have I'm not going in June, but my girlfriend and her mom are going in June, and then me with my kid, and then me and his grandpa, we're going to fly down and meet them in San Diego afterwards. I forget what we're going to do, but sometime then I'm like, well, hopefully COVID-19's all wrapped up by then, but we'll see. I mean, the ESA doesn't seem to think so because E3's in June, but yeah, we'll see what happens. It's funny because I rewatched Contagion. I'm like, there's no report about Disneyland shutting down a Contagion. It skips that entirely. Come on, Steven Soderbergh.
I think one of the kind of interesting things for me about this is as it relates to E3, I've seen a lot of talk of like, is this going to be the death of E3? And not in like a negative way, but actually like a positive way. And I was kind of wondering about that. Like, maybe this is the year that Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo realize they're already slowly realizing they don't need E3 to begin with. But maybe this is the year that they all kind of team up and do something together, or that they do digital things, or like, I don't know how they handle it yet. It just seems like they could finally make some of those changes.
I feel like it could be good for them if they just did their own little, like, Nintendo always does their directs. Sony has State of Play, which they haven't done in a while, but I'm sure they're going to do one eventually to talk about PS4. I have a feeling they're waiting for Ghost of Tsushima to come out, because that's coming out in June. So you figure once that's out, Last was out, now you can focus on, you know, your next bit of stuff. Like from your first parties. Like obviously they still have Iron Man VR. I don't know if that's exclusive to PSVR, but it's like it's been advertised on PSVR. But that, I don't think that's a first party studio. But it's like you probably want to get those out of the way before you discuss. I mean, even when you look at like when Last of Us came out, Last of Us came out in June, right before or right after E3 or something like that. Like, and then they talked about, you know, PlayStation at that event. Granted, they had the reveal event in February, but they talked about it more at E3. But yeah, it could be a situation where maybe they're waiting. But yeah, if everybody does their own, you know, even Square Enix, like that one E3 where they had just a 30-minute trailer where it showed, like, you know, Just Cause and Kingdom Hearts and all the, and Tomb Raider, like in a 30-minute video, like everybody can do that. And then the benefit too is that you're not locked into this time frame where, you know, we have to get this vertical slice demo done by this date. We have to get this done by the date. Like if you're just doing a trailer package, that's got to be much easier than doing, you know, a working demo that doesn't bug out on you, because you don't have to crunch to get the demo. And then you have, again, more leeway. So it's like, you know, Microsoft can go whenever, like, hey, do we have anything to show? Yeah. Hey, does Studio B, can they get something? It's like, it might take a month. Okay, we'll wait. And just get this nice video package showing some stuff for Series X. And then, I mean, Nintendo kind of does their stuff as they want to. Usually it's focused to one game. But, I could see Sony doing that. It gives them a little more freedom. But I do like, as a consumer, the centralized. That's E3 started as a business thing where it's more like, hey, let's, you know, this is what we're making. Show it to retailers, like, how many units do you want to buy, you know, kind of thing. But then it went away from that. But yeah, I did like seeing, like, okay, what's Xbox got? What's, you know, EA doing? What's Activision doing? What's Sony doing? I like seeing them all in one centralized news week. I mean, I like that, but yeah, if it goes away, it's like, oh, well. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
I don't want it to disappear completely. I just want it to be a centralized digital event that's accessible to everyone still. Like, it kind of is right now, but God, I'm blanking on his name. This is going to bother me. The guy who didn't want to take part in the E3 this year because it wasn't digital and he didn't feel like they'd taken steps forward. Or not E3. Video Game Awards? Shit, I'm blanking. Jeff Keighley?
Jeff Keighley? Well, he just didn't agree with the way... Or not, he didn't agree. He just said he's just going to back out because it wasn't quite going the direction he wanted, which has been a lot of people's complaints. It's going way more consumer, which E3, if it stays around, it just will be that. It'll be like a PAX or, you know, a... What's that? Gamescom kind of thing. Like, it'll be more of a consumer show and not a publisher-developer show. I could see that what it turns into. I mean, they obviously started selling tickets initially because they figured get some revenue in, additional revenue anyways, and they increased the amount of people can go into the show floor. It's like, that's probably what it's going to turn into, is just a consumer show. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. But, yeah, and I know that I'm not sure where all the, obviously, the components for PS5 and Xbox Series X could be developed across the board in different locations of China and probably, like, Singapore or someplace, or whatever country is manufacturing electronics. They could have, like, little bits here, and they go maybe to China to be assembled, you know, to primary components. But I know they're back up and running and doing production in China, so I'm curious. You know, I don't think, you know, as long as it doesn't keep spreading in that country, I'd imagine manufacturing is probably almost up to not quite 100%, but I know they expect, at least for our company, of our product, they expect it 100% up by middle end of this month. And they're, so it's like, okay, if you guys are up, that's good. But it's the initial, I mean, for us, it's the first couple of months dealing with restrained air freight, sea shipments, and just, you know, spots being allocated and everybody paying more to get that. Like, I'm sure Apple, I mean, that's one of the big things. It's about Apple, like, how much money are they going to spend to buy spots on these ships to get this product over to the U.S., especially if they're going to be launching, you know, new product and stuff like that. So you got to, we have all these companies we're, you know, competing with to get the space, and you don't really want to wait, especially for air freight product, but because the consoles aren't going to be till, you know, Christmas or holiday season, you figure they'll have plenty of time, and hopefully things will be not as severe. Or by then, at least we'll have a, you know, a cure. I think really it's just that incubation period that's so big that's the issue. But, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, that's it for the news. Again, there wasn't that much, just cancellations. There were things for other...
I mean, E3 being canceled is pretty big news. It's just there's not a whole lot to speculate about it. It's over and done.
Yeah. I mean, again, since Sony wasn't going to go there, I wasn't... Like, sure, I was going to watch, you know, see what Microsoft says, see what they show for Xbox. They're not technically at E3 because they do their Sunday night Microsoft Theater or whatever. But it's still, you consider part of E3. But, yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, I guess we'll just move into what we've been playing. It's probably a short episode. But I know last episode... You had talked about how you hadn't finished Outer Worlds, but in between then and now, you have. So,
yeah, so I'm officially done with Outer Worlds. The ending strokes were weird. They felt really rushed to me. I don't know if you want to do spoilers about it since it's been a while since it came out or not, but
you can try to dance around it.
I liked most of the game. I actually liked the entire game. I thought that the gunplay was a lot of fun, that the tactical time dilation was a great alternative to like VATS. I thought that was all great. The only part I didn't really like was the actual story. So I know the story is satire and is supposed to be funny or anything, but it was too satirical in the sense that like it never had a point or was good on its own aside from just making fun of like story beats that other games take. And I kind of felt especially that way near the end with how they wrap everything up. It was like, haha, aren't we so funny? And it was like, well, sure, I guess, but also your story didn't end in a good way. You were just making fun of other things. And then when the final, like the story at the very, very end finally does get interesting, that's when the game ends. So it's like 99% of the game, the story beats weren't quite landing. Like I thought they were humorous and I enjoyed them and I liked the dialogue a lot, but I didn't think the story beats themselves were landing. And then the last 1% of the game, it's like, this is what everything's been building up to. And there's even like a joke trophy that's like, aha, and the audience gasps. But then that's when the game cuts off and ends.
Yeah.
And then there's this like climactic sequence at the end when you're going into the final level and you're like making your way through the final level. And you start seeing how like various quests paid off for or against you. That was just kind of very generic to me. Like, it wasn't cool at all. It was just like, oh, here's X person or like X quest that you did earlier. Look how it's coming back to full circle now. And it's like, well, great. That could have been far more interesting in some other way. It felt just like the end was underdeveloped and like they basically had to cut off the game to get it out in time, which I think is kind of true because they confirmed story DLC to, I want to say, in a wish I had the articles so that I wasn't instantly wrong, but I think that in their story DLC, they said they were going to finish the story as opposed to like expand on it or something, which certainly makes it seem like they knew they were shipping a game that wasn't quite done, but that it was kind of their only option.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely wasn't a big fan of the ending, just that. Not to, I'm gonna spoil like the style of it, but yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like one of those, it reminds you like when the movie ends and then it still frames and it's like, and then Billy went on to do this and, you know, Tom's.
Well, I mean, all of the Fallout games have done that recently where they show all the like decisions you've made in a slideshow.
Were they a slideshow in Fallout 4? I don't remember being a slideshow.
It's the same type of like slideshow thing discussing how great or horrible you were. And it's every single time it happens, I'm always thinking like, well, this would have been really cool if you actually showed the towns developing like this because of the decisions I made, as opposed to just telling me that like X amount of years after this happens.
Yeah, I don't know. And then just getting up to, you know, I'm going to let you finish, but there's a settlement that needs your help.
Yeah.
But that very well could have been the case with the slideshow endings of Fallout. I'd have to, because I replayed that too, like right before Fallout 76. I guess, I don't know. I just don't remember.
All of those were kind of just like lame endings. Those games were never really about the endings. They were always about the
journey.
Not even the journey. The exploring the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And with like most of those games, it's even anticlimactic in the sense in Outer Worlds as well, where by the end of it, you're so freaking powerful that the story beats at the end always, at least in my opinion, fall kind of flat. And I felt like it was doubly so with a game that was pretty damn well polished throughout 95% of it. Like, I don't think I really had any major bugs or anything the entire time.
Yeah, I didn't have any bugs in the game as well. No, no issues at all. I think there was, kind of some people, I don't know if they have a day one patch. I think I only ever heard about, like, maybe some minor issues during, from, like, some of the reviewers on podcasts when they talk about the games and their experience, because they had obviously put out their reviews beforehand. But, yeah, I mean, I had a fun time. Ending being not that great aside, like, yeah, I'd definitely play a sequel. I like the satirical, like, corporate stuff all the way through. I didn't mind that. And I wasn't initially, like, super invested in the story. Like, you know, oh, who we're getting, who can we side with, yada, yada.
The problem is, like, I liked it as a joke, but not as an actual stands on its own story. Like, that's the problem with satire, is you can make fun of something as long as you want, but ultimately, if you don't have your own, like, quality story there to back it up, your entire point is just shitting on something else. And not to say that, like, they did a bad or good job at it, it's just, it's there's not much else there until the very end.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what they'll do with the sequel. If, like, the more budget for Microsoft will change it. In the, like, what ways will it change? But yeah, I've just been playing more, again, more Apex a lot, because my cousin's been playing it more, so now I've been just playing it a ton. Still really enjoying the game, just hot-dropping. The Deja Loot mode that they introduced isn't really that good. I thought it would be kind of fun. That's what
you're talking about, where it's the exact same every time.
Yeah, the only thing that I wish wasn't the same is that it's not even that the loot's the same and the flight path is the same. It's that the circle's the same. And the problem there is, like, well, the whole point of Battle Royale is not just the, you know, tons of people, but you don't know where the circle's going to go. So the whole thing is, like, wherever you like to land might not be a good spot, or it could be like, oh, we're trekking all the way across the map because the way the circle bounced. Like, that is the randomized factor. It's not only the players and their skill level, which typically in the skill-based matchmaking is going to be around yours, and the randomized loot traditionally. But in this one, obviously, loot's the same. Like, that's fine. Keep the flight path the same. I don't care. But the circle has to change, because if everybody knows where the final circle is going to be, they can just go to that point of interest, loot up, you know, and just be good to go and camp the whole time. And it's just, it's not good. I don't like it. And because it only changes every new day. And I'm like, if they just changed it to where the circle changed, then it would be a fun mode. Because then it's like, okay, I know there's 3 purple shields and some good guns in this place, but everybody knows it. So we can drop hot and get there. Maybe we'll get lucky with the circle.
But it kind of seems like one of those things where, in theory, they thought that people wouldn't abuse the system and it would be a great mode, but in reality, people found a loophole extremely quick.
Well, I mean, that's it. It's typically like how, like, it's not everybody that camps the final circle necessarily. A lot of people tend to land at the places that have all the good gear. So I think they also increase the rate at which the gear pops in. The current week event is in the old map, so probably a lot of people playing it there just because people are nostalgic for the old map, which I think is, like, if the second map was the first map and the first was the second, people would be nostalgic for the new map, because that's just, you get, you like the first one you experience. I mean, that's happened to PUBG, Fortnite. Granted, their map didn't change until season, or Fortnite, what do they call it, season 2, the whole, like, when once they changed the map and they had that black hole event, then the map actually changed. It only changed little bits, but the overall design of the map would be exactly the same. Granted, when they added the biomes, that really did change up that map a lot. But yeah, I mean, people in PUBG, they wanted a new map for the longest time. They're like, new map, new map, new map. And then they got a new map and no one really liked it. And then they got another one, no one liked that one. And then everybody's like, oh man, they missed the first map. And it's like, yeah, it's because you're nostalgic for that first map, because you learn that one in and out. All your best memories are from that map. It's like, that's the case. But the new map, World's Edge, is a good map, and I like it a lot better than King's Canyon. But there's a lot of people just rose-tinted glasses who just miss King's Canyon. I'm like, that's because you spent your first two seasons there. And it's like, I'd be curious to see, you know, talk to someone who joined in season three or later, and then find out once they played King's Canyon, like, what do you think about King's Canyon? And just hear and be like, yeah, it's okay. Like, yeah, exactly. It's that nostalgia factor. But yeah. And then I haven't played Warzone. I was going to play a little bit of Assassin's Creed Odyssey DLC the other day, but then I just kind of ran around and then I didn't do anything. It's like, I'm not going to do it. I still have to finish Journey to the Savage Planet. Haven't gone back in there. I need to do that. I'm pretty close to the end there. And I do like running around and exploring that game. I just haven't done it. But, yeah, we got Doom next week. That'll be coming out on Friday, so hopefully play it some Friday night, be able to talk a bit about it on the podcast. But
just think, with all this mandatory work from home and quarantine stuff, originally we could have had Last of Us 2 right now.
Could all well, yeah, been playing that a couple weeks ago. Yep. But yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'll wrap it up for this episode. Then I have nothing else to really bring up. Just trying to remember if there's anything. There is one. I almost forgot about it. It's not on PS4. I could totally see it coming to PS4. But it's another Battle Royale game. So there's a lot of Battle Royale games on PC. There's like Super Animal Royale, which is a third-person isometric Battle Royale. It's a pretty fun game, too. It lets you playing around with a bunch of animals. I think that goes up to maybe 60, maybe 100 players? I don't remember. But that's a lot of fun. It does have a Mac version as well. But there's another one that came out recently on PC called Bomber Grounds. And it's essentially a Bomberman Battle Royale. And it looks really fun. And so, to change it up, and granted, maybe Bomberman did this in some fashion. I haven't played Bomberman since PlayStation 1. But you have a baseball bat, and you can hit the bombs away from you. So someone puts down a bomb, and you get trapped, you can hit the bomb away. And then maybe set off a chain reaction and get someone else's bomb across the map. And then, of course, the grid, eventually the outer rings of the grid fall away and get smaller and yada yada. And then there's the loot you find are these stars. And as you level up your star rank, your bombs increase. So they'll get an extra range in each direction. And then you go up like 3 times. And your character size also increases, so that way it gives a visual representation to the other players showing that, hey, this person is, you know, medium or large size. That means if they put down a bomb, which also increases in size, you'll know, like, okay, instead of a 3 range, that one's a 5 range or whatever. I need to get away, you know, this distance away. But it looks like a lot of fun. I watched a streamer play it, and he even had a lot of fun playing it. It's just like, I love the idea of a Bomberman battle royale. I think it's only like 25 people. It's not 100, obviously. But
I feel like if I ever played that, I would just be like swinging the bat wildly. There would be no strategy. It would just be like swing wildly and hope that I survive.
Swing away. But there is a strat where if you hold down the bat and you charge up to max and you hit someone with the bat, you smack them out of the ring and you get a kill. So you can just, instead of planting bombs, just hold max. Granted, when you do that, your character moves at a slower speed. And the lower rank you are, the longer it takes for your bat to fully charge. So sometimes you can get down to like a 1v1 situation at the end, and instead of putting down bombs, you both just have the bats charged and you're trying to see who can hit the other person with that swing. But I could totally see this game coming to PS4. Who knows if it would, because usually any games, in order to do that, would have to sell really well on Steam first, and then they would port over because they got to, you know, pay for that dev kit and then, you know, the licensing to put it on the console. But, yeah, it'd be cool. I could totally see playing that, just a small PSN game. I also haven't checked up on Project Winter to see how they're doing for their console stretch goals, because I know that was in their timeline on they want to do a console versions once they got so far down. Let's check their roadmap, because that's a game I definitely want to play as well. Okay, so right now, next, future, let's see, future is ported to Nintendo Switch, Okay, so right now on their next category, they have everything checked off that they've done. So they've done upgraded to the to Unity. They've upgraded special roles. They've player toxicity management. They've expanded the game settings. They did the emote system. So the only thing they have left in their current tier of what they're projecting is new maps, new items, release on other digital stores, so Epic, and then port to Xbox and port to PlayStation. So they could be coming here pretty quickly. I'm assuming new items would be prioritized over the new map. Granted, it's just an Isomech made simple map. They could probably shouldn't take them too long to design it. So yeah, Project Winter could be ported to PlayStation pretty quick. I mean, that would be dope. I would love to play the game. It's one of those secret role kind of games. You know, you gotta, you know, survive the storm and do objectives, but there are people who are traitors and they're trying to sabotage. It's I've watched a lot of it and I'd love to play it. But yeah, hopefully that, man, if that comes to PS4 or even PS5, that'd be awesome. But yeah, anyways. All right, well, that'll wrap it up for this episode. Thank you all for tuning and listening. Thank you, Zaya, for not Zaya. Sorry. I thought it was Zaya the whole time. I was thinking about the spider in my head, and Zaya hates spiders. But thank you, Isley, for joining.
Yeah.
Rude.
Zaya's welcome.
Yeah, Zaya's welcome. It's that Spider-Man. Got in my head. But
just threw y'all off.
Yep. I gotta stop thinking about it. But yeah. So we will see you all next time.
Later.